And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Chest out and real proud, and we're not afraid when we got Karen Katowski on. Because Karen, she's an unafeared individual that was very inspirational. A lot of people in the Pentagon. The Lieutenant Colonel retired. She's in the Pentagon, and she's also a PhD, United States Air Force retired. Come in, explain it to us. Well, she's got a lot to say. I tell you one thing, we had her on a few weeks ago. And she's like, not, I tell you who she was voting for, not Hillary. That's what, you know, it's freaking not Hillary election. But, you know, then immediately, within days, all of a sudden, we got Woolsey coming over to the Trump campaign doing something. And Karen had something to say. She said, what? James Woolsey? Hell no. So tell us everything about the hell no on Woolsey. Karen, go.
Yeah, well, you've got this Woolsey guy. He used to be the head of the CIA under the Clintons. And he, I guess 2 weeks ago, a little less than 2 weeks ago, he made an announcement that he had been made or named one of Donald Trump's security advisors. And word on the street is that he's been promised or expects to be appointed as the DCI, Central Intelligence, the overall, you know, the head advisor on intelligence for the president. This is that new, you see the CIA was in charge of all 17 intelligence agencies, and the CIA chair, the CIA, head of the CIA would be the voice. Now they have a special NSC person who's in charge of all the intel, and all the intel supposedly reports to him. Anyway, that's a change they made after 9/11. And that's a pretty important job, and he thinks he's going to be getting that job under Trump. I haven't heard much about it since the initial announcement, but I was talking to a friend of mine who is hooked in with some of these guys, and he said meetings are being held now to go ahead and allocate out all the rest of the appointments. And it's very similar to the way that key political appointee positions in the security area in D.C., in and around the Pentagon, at the State Department, and that kind of thing, and the NSC, were hand-picked and hand-filled. But back in that day, it was Dick Cheney doing this. So Woolsey's a Dick Cheney acolyte. You know, I don't know if they're close friends, but they're definitely in the same team and have been for ages and ages. And, of course, PNAC, Project for New American Century, that was so famous back in 1998 and leading up to the invasion of Iraq and all that, Woolsey's a founding member there. So his friends are not our friends. And he has apparently gotten his hooks in to, you know, into the Trump campaign, apparently. And two things you can read into that, of course. One is that they think Trump's going to win. And I'll tell you this. You wanted me to watch the debate, so I watched the debate. And, it was hard going, but I did it. And but, you know, Trump did fine, you know, but in my view, of course, there was nobody speaking for liberty. There was nobody really, really fighting for the Constitution up there. So, you know, I was disappointed in both sides. Having said that, I think the polls, for the most part, not the media polls, but the actual polls that talk to actual people, are saying that Trump won that. And I think that's very telling, because I think Trump's going to roll through and get those electoral college votes that he needs. I think it's pretty clear that's what's going to happen. And I don't think Hillary's polished shined up look is going to help her much, because really people are, this is a referendum on do we like D.C. or not, and most of us do not. And Trump's the guy carrying that banner. I don't like D.C. I'm going to break it up. And people like that, and they don't care what he does or what he says. This is what they're supporting him for. And I think that's still valid. But what's scary to me, and what I wrote in that article for Lou, it's very frightening that the neocons have come to the same conclusion that I have, and that they are positioning themselves to basically work to own the foreign policy, which is to say that they want to put forth a warmongering foreign policy, and also, of course, to secure their current and past investments in the welfare state. But it's primarily the warfare state that they're into. But what we could look forward to if this prevails. I mean, if Woolsey is truly going to be named DCI, or Director of National Intelligence, DNI, I guess it is. If he's going to be named DNI, and given,
DNI, describe that to me. His acronym's military,
it's Director
what?
Director of National Intelligence. Director of National Intelligence, and I think I said DCI before. The director of the CIA used to be the head advisor to the president on intelligence, and he would get feeds from, Defense Intelligence Agency, which is 70% of the intelligence budget right there in the defense side, plus the other agencies that were outside of the Department of Defense. And the director of CIA would be the head advisor to the president. But after one of the things they reorganized, I guess, with the Patriot Act was, and I'm pretty sure it was the Patriot Act, but it was around that same time, they reorganized intel and created a special director of national intelligence, which is above and different from the head of the CIA. So now the CIA has to report, and the other guys, other intelligence agencies report in. And the DNI then supposedly makes it all objective for the president. But that's not how it works in real life. It doesn't become objective. It becomes even more politicized and manipulated, which is what got us into a number of these things in the past that have killed a lot of people and destroyed a lot of wealth of this country.
Well, what's his philosophy? I mean, he came from the Clinton administration. He was in, he's just a neocon?
Well,
what?
We'll have to go to Wikipedia and look at his total background, but he's basically just, he's a neoconservative, meaning that he thinks that we should use our military force to spread democracy and enforce it around the world.
So, yeah, he's one of them.
So that's part of it. And then he was a big part in hooking everybody up in D.C. with Ahmed Chalabi. You remember Chalabi, right? He's going to be the guy we put in place after we got rid of Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Because Chalabi was our guy. And he was close to them and worked with the Iraqi National Congress and helped push through legislation to fund them in the Congress with our tax dollar. And all these other things that all went to hell in a handbasket didn't amount to much except to get people killed and destroy multiple countries in the Middle East. But this is what he believes in, and I just think they realize Hillary's lost it, and Trump's going to be it, and so they're hitching their wagon to the horse that will maintain them in power. And they've been a little tiny bit frustrated with Obama. The neocons, they say Obama doesn't listen to us, but quite frankly, Obama has continued the Bush foreign policy. So they have little to complain about with Obama. Hillary has already signed on to them. I mean, she has a list of countries in addition to the 7 that the neocons want. Hillary's got a few more she'd like to tear up. So she fits in perfectly, and I think she was who they were supporting. In fact, many of the Republicans that have, leading well-known Republicans who have signed on to opposing Trump and they say, we're going to support Hillary, like George Herbert Walker Bush and George Bush Jr., right, George W. Bush, I should say, and his wife. All of those have said, well, we're supporting Hillary. Well, the reason they are is because Hillary is, of course, as we all know, the status quo, not just domestic policy status quo, but foreign policy status quo. And our foreign policy is still and continues to be a neoconservative foreign policy, meaning that it advocates that the United States is top dog, what is in charge, number one, and number two, that we have every moral and philosophical and every other kind of right to manifest other countries' governments, to mandate them, to set them up with democracies. Of course, only the kind of democracies that do what we tell them to do. So it's really an imperial foreign policy.
Well, when we come back, if you got an opinion or know anything about, I was interested in this, Paris Agreement of we're all on board of environmental, we're signing Obama just did it thing. We'll see what that Karen has to say about that.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers.
Yeah, no, we don't have to. I just, you know, thought that. You know, it's more of this global we rule you crap. You know,
oh,
so.
Yeah, well, that's coming. That's coming, and that's also something that if Trump's in place, it's very likely he will oppose those just on principle, which is good.
What principle? That was one thing I was waiting on. There wasn't single mention of individual rights. And the only thing they even talked about of rights was Second Amendment, and he's agreeing with her on we need to, you know, stop and get and frisk and take and stuff.
Well, I don't, you know, you can't really figure out what's going on in his head. He's not, you know, we know Trump is not overly philosophically aligned. Okay, you know, he's not driven by a philosophy of freedom or anything else. But you know what? He's not the only one. Because you remember when, who's the guy? The guy that owns the Dallas basketball team. He's on Sharks.
Cubain or whatever, Cuban or whatever his name is.
No, he was sitting in the front row for Hillary there. Mark Cuban. He's a billionaire, another billionaire.
Yeah, I know he is, yeah.
Yeah, well, he's sitting in the front row of that debate. Of course, they never panned to the people. They didn't want to include them. But he said, you know, he's a Hillary. He's an upfront Hillary supporter.
Yeah.
And he's Cuban. Cuban was rumored for many, many years, and for good reason, to be supporting of libertarian candidates and liberty-minded people. And here he is backing Hillary. So I think a lot of people are not philosophically aligned and motivated. They don't really know what their philosophy is. And of course, Trump doesn't, and he's appealing to a lot of those people who think they love freedom, but they'll butcher you if you don't stand up for the Constitution. They'll physically, you know, they will lynch you if you don't want to stand. See, so they love freedom, but it's only theirs, you know, or whatever they think it's narrowly defined as. And this is a problem in the whole country because we're you know, we don't raise our kids. Well, we might raise our kids, but the country doesn't raise its children. The schools don't do any good of helping people think clearly and logically about what it is that they believe is important. The founders tried to help define what they thought was important for government to do, and it was to protect some very simple natural rights. That was all government was supposed to do, protect those rights of the people that live in this country. And that was it. And that was a hard job just to do that. But that's where they left it at. And, of course, nowadays government does everything, and we don't really think clearly about how that relates to natural rights, how that relates to liberty, to human liberty. We don't even have a connection between that. And it's because our government has nothing to do with freedom, has nothing to do with those things. So Trump is kind of talking a few things that appeal to people, kind of an echo of their love of liberty. He's kind of reminding them a little bit that government's too big. But he himself doesn't even know how too big it is. Although, I thought it was great what he said about the debt. He said that within the first 30 minutes, he reminded people several times about the amount of debt that we have that cannot be paid back.
He did such a bad job of it, though. I mean, I was. Just...
Well, he doesn't understand why he's uncomfortable with it. He doesn't know why it's a disaster. I think he's uncomfortable with it, but he doesn't really understand why it's so terrible and how it came about. He did talk about the Federal Reserve. I think, you know, if there's nothing else at all, the fact that the Federal Reserve and its role is being questioned at the very national top level
finally.
Stage.
Ron had that too. All right, here we're coming back.
To listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with a chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Karen Katowski, go to the archive. We just don't stop yakking. Well, we're going to go ahead and try and, you know, summarize what's up. You know, there's, Butler Schaefer, right? I'm sure you know Butler.
Yeah, great guy.
Well, his daughter, Brittany, she writes, you know, quite a bit. She has a rambling rant, you know, on the election. And I just, you know, read this real quick. We'll comment on it. She goes,
Okay.
I'm told there was a debate last night between two of the candidates for president of the United States. Only I know that's not true. It can't be true because there are no political debates on nationwide television in this country, not real ones. There is no place in the national discourse for issues of real substance to be debated. And, you know, she didn't even watch it. She's like, I wasted my time. Mm-hmm. The whole purpose of televised debates and of mainstream political discourse more broadly is to establish the limits of acceptable topics of discussion, to decree by the very act of posing the questions what may be questioned and what may not. So, no, there wasn't a debate last night. There were two total statists standing on a stage. I don't know. Did they stand? Disputing the finer points of how best to wield total state power over the lives of everyone else. Will we deport all Muslims from our country and build a wall to keep them out, or simply continue bombing them in their own countries? Will we continue to extort money from the citizens in order to finance our wars of aggression all over the world? Or will we extort money to build a high-speed coast-to-coast monorail that only stops at national monuments and runs on cheese fumes? I mean, you know, this is exactly the idea. It's just we don't really have a debate. And when we had Ron Paul in these debates, as much as they bitch, whine, and moan, the people loved it. Certainly the generation, and I think we got spoiled. We could have had Ron Paul, damn it, you know, and then we'd be on the road to recovery, hopefully. I don't know. That this debt thing, is it ever going to be addressed no matter who's in there? Or are we just going to let it fall?
Well, it's going to be renegotiated, just like Trump says, and she was so upset that, not during the debate last night, but he said elsewhere that he'd negotiate that debt down, basically sell it on dimes to the dollar. And that's exactly what's going to happen, whether Trump or any other president does it or not. That debt's not payable. That $20 trillion current account debt is not payable, not one bit. And that's with 0% interest, so you can imagine if the interest on that starts going up. It's not terrible. It will be renegotiated down. It will be collapsed. It will be dishonored by this country. And all the other trillions of dollars, some say as high as $225 or $240 trillion of unfunded liabilities, promises to our own people and Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and all that other stuff, that's also going to be shorted. The government's not going to be good to that, okay? The Fed's part of this process. The Fed enables the government to inflate money at will. So, you know, these things were named by Trump. They were mentioned by Trump, not in the context that a knowledgeable person would do it, not the way Ron Paul would be able to articulate it, but at least he brought it up. But I have to agree, you know, Brittany's dead on, obviously. They are so afraid of having a smart lady like the Green Party person. I forget her name all of a sudden. You know what I'm talking about. The green lady who got kicked out of the...
Jill Stein or something like that.
Jill Stein, yeah. Super smart, super presentable, makes Hillary Clinton look... She could debate Hillary alone and beat her. Just on issues that they want to talk about on the whole left spectrum, they could argue. And then you've got, of course, the so-called libertarians, which are not libertarians, but other types of Republicans is what they are. In any case, they are willing, those libertarian candidates, Weldon, Johnson, are willing to talk about other kinds of issues. And had we had them on the stage, could have had quite an interesting discussion. It could have been more broad-ranging. Instead, we get all this personal tit-for-tat accusations about stupid stuff from the past that makes no sense to anybody. And then Hillary's over there trying to provoke an argument by saying that he called a lady fat. And I read somewhere that the funny thing about feminism is, you know, Donald Trump's called lots of men fat and ugly, you know, all kinds of them, including guys like Chris Christie who endorsed him. You know, he said these things, but if you say that to a woman, of course, with feminism, should mean equal rights for everybody, equal rights to be insulted, but apparently it doesn't go that far. It's not equal. If you insult a woman, now we're all of a sudden back in the Victorian era, and oh my God, no man could ever insult a woman. And yet Hillary's in there provoking him when her own husband, you know, is a rapist. And she helps cover up these crimes. So, and that's just on the woman's side. That's just on the feminist issue alone, which is not my big issue. I don't care about that. It didn't even need to come up. But, of course, Hillary brought it up repeatedly because I think she's trying to make sure she's got the female vote, but she doesn't. She doesn't even have the female vote, which is a shame for her. You know, she's just a puppet.
You know, one thing that didn't happen that I anticipated is as they were going on about his business and everything, he didn't even once mention the Clinton Foundation. And it's like...
I know. Yeah.
I'm wondering why, you know, does he have something to do with it? He was a contributor. Is there, you know, and he wasn't ready for it. He didn't prepare. There was a,
I don't know if he didn't prepare. He might have prepared in his own way, but I know one thing he prepared for, and he prepared not to insult her. He prepared to control his temper and to treat her like a lady, which he does not deserve that. But he, I think that clearly was his intention. And her intention was to provoke him into making some soundbite that she could then make money off of, which didn't happen.
So he thinks he won by just not being too misogynist of something.
I think, maybe. And I know that she was trying to get him to go off on her. And so she could feed that in, and he wouldn't do it. And he made it a point to be overly respectful to her. And I think that does show his preparation, because he was clearly annoyed at her, and he did have to control himself a little bit, because he's not a guy who likes to waste time. And clearly, that whole thing, 90 minutes, most of it was wasted time. And he was stuck in this mode, and she too. It's just stupid. Again, Brittany's right.
No debate
occurred. That was not a debate.
No, I mean, it's not. They didn't learn anything. There's nothing you go to the water cooler to really talk about other than ouch, quit it. Because, if I do my little cocktail napkin math here, I'm looking at, let's see, they admitted, straight up $20 trillion debt, and we got, what, 330 whatever million, and that looks, I do the math, and that's like $60,000 per man, woman, child, small, got everybody here done, $60,000, got it on you? And I'm going, that is no way that is ever going to get paid back.
No, it's not going to get paid back. And also, this doesn't count, this is federal debt only. This doesn't count municipal debt, which is huge.
Yep.
And, everybody pays property taxes if they own property. Those property taxes in some places, 10 or 15 years of property taxes is over the value of the home that you own, that you pay that locally. You pay that to your local, and they're in debt, okay? They're financing off future payments that they hope to receive from you on your property that may be paid off. It doesn't matter. So, this is not talking total debt of the government that overlays this country. Municipal debt and state debt is kind of like, they can handle that because most of them have balanced budget amendments. But they've got tons of borrowing, and they're selling off assets themselves to cover their own state butts. And here we have, we're just talking about the federal. I mean, it's insane. And I have to say, I was surprised and happy that he mentioned it a couple of times early on, because I don't think people stayed and watched that thing for the full 90 minutes. It was hard to make myself do it.
How did you do? We're going to go to the archive, because I'm going to ask Karen that very thing. I would go in. We had it, Monday Night Football and the debate here at the same time, and go between the two. And then it kind of just turned into debate. Everybody was like, it was a blowout game or whatever. So they're just kind of high scoring, but it's going back. I had to get up and walk to the next one. Hey, how about you guys? I couldn't sit still.
So you signed the Shire Society Declaration.
I couldn't. I just couldn't more than 90 seconds. I was just like, it's like reading the local newspaper. I just want my brain cells back.
Yeah, exactly. It was an insult to the. It was very much like a something you would imagine they did in the Soviet Union. When they had everything was arranged and controlled. So many little agreements. Apparently she had backlighting underneath her podium so that her wrinkles wouldn't show up. And I thought that was kind of neat. She did look awfully healthy.
Yeah, no, man. See, that's one thing. I felt the sigh. This is, all right, correct me if you think I'm wrong here. This is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Last weekend, since we talked before, we were out back, on the patio, just the deck, chilling, kind of talking, whatever. And then Barry Hess, one of the, he's a libertarian, candidate for whatever. He's has an opinion, and his wife, she works for us and helps around here and doesn't post stuff and sees the headlines. You can see that she's headlining. She's mm-hmm. dozens of headlines. That's how she might watch a little video, do something, but she's influenced by this. And she was going, is she dead? Is she going to be able to stand up? Is she going to be able to make it through the hour and a half and stand? Oh my God, she's got to. And it was, I'm going, oh my God, I could see what was going on. It's a psyop. They're getting men. If all she has to do is just freaking not die on stage, and she wins. Yeah. It was just all about, it's just BS. The whole thing, we got the highest ratings of rankings. Go watch that. She stood up the whole time. If that was the most important thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, these leaders that they're putting forth to us, well, certainly in her case, you know, she is the establishment pick. This is an election where you can vote for identical to what we have in terms of government, or 75% of what we have in government. And the 75% of status quo is probably Trump. Because, well, you can try to vote for, you know, the libertarians. But I'm telling you, they didn't pick libertarian candidates, so I don't have any faith in that choice. I don't think Johnson and Weld are libertarians at all. They're very hypocritical. They're as much for gun control as Trump, and maybe even more so. So, you know, this is one example where they're not libertarian, and so I don't see them as offering us anything that wouldn't be status quo. And actually, you know, Jill Stein, for all of her left-wing ideology, which I don't think makes any sense to me, or most people if they really look at it, but she's very smart, and she's certainly willing to say what she thinks, which I think is good. So if you wanted to have a woman president, you might as well have one that actually doesn't lie to your face. Hillary is just, you know, I just can't tolerate her. But again, you know, I remember I was in the military during the Clinton era, and we used to hear all these stories of her mistreating military officers and, you know, all the things that we still hear about, you know, but we were hearing about them then in the Pentagon. And so we had, it's very hard for me to like Hillary. And also as a wife and a mother and a woman, I don't have any respect for. I don't, this whole standing with your man thing, it's one thing to stand by your man. It's another thing to go after the women that he victimized. You know, that's way too much.
Where is her support? It comes from what?
I don't know. It comes from liberal Republicans, I think. And again, I think there's some people who, well, I got a sister-in-law who likes her, and she thinks that, you know, I guess she thinks that, you know, she'll be a good president, she'll be a woman. You know, I don't really know. I don't understand. There are people.
All right, we're coming back. Here we go.
Love Twitter? Make sure you favorite the LRN.FM Twitter account so you can receive our tweets at twitter.lrn.fm. That's twitter.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Karen Katowski explaining it to us. You know, this is, I'm wondering where you were just starting to tell us a story about an in-law or something, and because my question was, you know, where is Hillary's support base coming from? Mm-hmm. It's not Trump, anybody but Trump, including Hillary. I mean, this is the biggest election of you're voting against the other guy from a philosophical or personal opinion of some nothing for kind of damn. So they're not going to have, you know, Stein or Johnson up there. Definitely that was never going to happen. And they were, oh, no, this time we're going to. And I'm like, no, you know, no.
Yeah, they don't want it. It's a scripted. It was all scripted for the most part. I mean, obviously the answers weren't scripted, and that was, and really, I think the reason people still like Trump, including people who may have seen him for the first time on, you know, on that the other night with the debate, he's clearly not scripted. He's clearly not scripted, and this is attractive to some people. And I hope they go and vote for him if they think being not scripted is a good thing. Because I have to say it's better than being scripted by the socialist fascists that run the country now, which Hillary is definitely part of that. I mean, I was just, you know, we were talking about how you could stand to watch it. I mean, she's turning my stomach with some of the stuff she said about, she was going to enforce profit sharing. Has she ever worked in the real world? Has she ever had a job?
She kept saying the rich, soaking the rich, get the rich. The rich made, they benefited too much of the rich. And I'm going, let me tell you how the rich got richer. It's all this monopolistic, you're not allowed to compete, we protect crony capitalist crap.
You know, Trump should have asked her, which of course, who knows if he ever will. But, you know, they were broke when they left the White House. Remember, she said, oh, we're broke. Uh-huh. They didn't have any money. And now they're worth over $200 million or something like that. I mean, how'd that come about? You know, how did the Clintons make their money? Off of their government connections, selling donations. He didn't bring this up, like you said, he didn't bring up Clinton Foundation. He may bring it up later. They've got two more debates, and let's hope he does. But the thing is, she's never worked. She's never held down a job. she said she's going to mandate at the federal level profit sharing. She didn't even know anything about business. It's so shocking to me that she would say that. It's not shocking that she said, I'm going to tax the rich, although she is the rich. You know, I don't see her jumping overboard like those extra checks, you know, because, you know, you can do that. You can pay whatever taxes you want to pay. You know, where has she been for the last 30 years?
You know, that was one thing that I thought was interesting. She said to, Trump said that he's hoping things go to crap so he can buy up a bunch of stuff and make a lot of money. And he goes, yeah, that's business.
Yep.
When it goes down, that's when I buy. Buy low, man.
That's right. And you know what else? She's talking about the housing. Neither one of them, because Trump didn't really get into it either. But the housing bubble that they're particularly talking about, I guess 2007, 2008, not that it's the first bubble of that type, but let's just say that's the one they were talking about, was entirely caused by federal government policy, okay? So, you know, betting on that is actually smart. Betting that it's going to pop is smart, because that's what happens when the government gets involved in industry and creates false and unsustainable incentives for something that really doesn't make any sense. I mean, the government has so little information with which it makes its decisions. You want it to be small so that it can't harm the economy. And our government is not small, and it does great harm to the economy. So she's talking about him betting against it. Like, what smart person wouldn't bet against a government policy to collapse in on itself, or to be counterproductive and to be expensive and to cost millions of people, you know, money and opportunity? This is exactly what government policies do, particularly domestically. But, of course, we see it in the foreign policy as well. I mean, look at the wars that we're in. What have we achieved? You know, we make a few more rich people. Maybe we can hope that they'll pay their taxes so that we can have the money to pay the interest on that debt they ran up. You know, I mean, seriously, it's just nuts. I don't think Trump really... I don't know what he gets about all this. I don't know what his underlying philosophy is. I do think it's nice that he's run a business, even though that business was one, you know, his business is really dependent on, government policy and a lot of leveraging and that kind of thing. I thought it was nice that he said he wasn't heavily leveraged at the moment. We have to assume that's true, that he wouldn't say it. So that's kind of something. But I mean, yeah, Hillary has no concept, and the stuff she's proposing, she was glad. She's talking about pushing. This is after Syngenta, whatever, that whole, you know, where we spent all that money on those electrical or solar panel subsidies, and the companies that went under because there was no demand and they didn't work. She's talking about doing more of that. I said, you should have called her on that immediately. Anyway, I don't know. I just don't know what's going on there. But again, it doesn't really matter. We're only allowed to talk about certain things. And I guess what was important is that Trump calls ladies fat, and that's really uncalled for. And Clinton's done it for so long, we might as well just have her. You know, she's well prepared for the job. And I'm thinking to myself, where did they pick Obama up at? He wasn't prepared for the job. Where did they pick up George W. Bush? Lord have mercy, he wasn't prepared for that job. What all of a sudden is being prepared for that job have to do with anything? You know, JFK wasn't prepared for the job. LBJ wasn't prepared for the job. I can't think of a single president that was prepared for the job. Maybe Eisenhower. You know, and that didn't help him much. He did it.
Well, at least he warned us. You know, this...
He warned us at the last day. He warned us on the last day. He come on. That's a cop-out. I'm sorry.
Well, what are you looking for, if Hillary prevails? I mean,
Here's the thing. If either one of them prevail, which obviously somebody's going to prevail, and also going to have Obama. Okay, one of those three choices, right? I think people in this country need to wake up a little bit. And you're trying to get them to wake up. I know this, but people are going to have to wake up and realize that they have to take charge of their own lives and their own opportunities. They got to make their own opportunities. And we really have to start saying no. We have to start saying no locally. We have to say it to our state. We have to say it to the federal government. I think we need to really more and more people. And already, I think maybe 10% of the population has actually got their eyes open. That's huge. But we need another 10. We need another 15% of people with their eyes open, asking the right questions, turning their backs on government, not paying taxes. And you know how you avoid paying taxes? There's the way the rich people can avoid it, but there's the way poor people can avoid it too. And it's just, you don't work at a get a job where they take the taxes out. And seriously, a lot of people do that not because they want to, but because they have to. And all this is good because, you know, the government needs us to consent, even though it doesn't look like that. It doesn't really need us to vote to elect this guy or that guy. It needs us to consent to its authority, and we don't have to. And we can withdraw that consent in a million ways, and that's what we're going to have to do. And I think it's very clear looking at that debate and knowing what I read and what I know about who's advising Trump on the security side, that they're going to make sure, the neocons and the status quo in Washington is going to make sure the foreign policy does not change. Because, you know, Trump did scare them with his talk of, you know, America first, his talk of, you know, it doesn't make any sense to be in the Middle East. We should stop wasting money there. These are good things. American people are responding well to that, and that frightens them. So, you know, he has some things that he might bring to the table, but they're so few, and there's no guarantee he would be able to prevail in any of this, that really we just have to look at this election as one more step down the road, and we need to assert our own authority over our own lives and stop paying lip service to the government. We pay lip service now. Most people don't believe in the federal government. They just pay lip service like they do. But if you get down to it, they don't. They don't trust it. You know, they don't believe it. This is part of the Trump phenomenon. This is why he gets, you know, thousands of people showing up on short notice to his things, because he's saying what they already believe. He's saying...
What is he saying that people believe? What is he saying? I'm not getting any... We're going to do a Trump report tomorrow, and I get something said or something. What?
What he says, maybe it's not so much what he says as how he says it. He shows a regular and predictable contempt for the federal government.
Yep.
Basically, everything it touches goes to hell. You know, everything, it turns gold into crap. He says that. This is his message, one of his messages. It's a message of contempt, and he says he could do it better. We don't know if he could do it better. But the fact that he is saying loudly, I have a contemptuous view, you know, perspective on the federal government, that's wonderful.
Go to the archive. Karen's not done.
Uncovering the
thing, you know, that contempt. We need to build on it and grow on it and cultivate it. And of course, you know, this is why his people, his followers, people that have said they're supporting him, are being demonized by the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats. The reason they're being demonized is because he is preaching that we don't have to do what the federal government says. That's the underlying message. And it's true anyway, whether anybody says it or not. It's always been true. You never have to do what the government says. Now, you have to take consequences. If your government's big enough to kill you, it might kill you for that. But our government's not quite yet big enough to kill us all. It could try.
They're doing this, you know, soft, little, kind of controlled, unhealthy, vaccinated, polluted kind of... Set the trigger off in the whatever the heck we own you crap. I mean, death panel or something.
I have to tell you, you know, if you look at that, the spraying of that poison they're using against the mosquitoes down in Florida, the Norton Medal or whatever it is, I forget the name of the powder that it is. It's already been banned in Europe, of course, like a lot of other things that we still use here for health reasons. But anyway, they're spraying it. But do you know the Puerto Ricans? Who have a territory, not a state. I don't know if that makes any difference, because there's certainly a welfare state of the government. You know, I mean, a lot of federal money flows there, and it's not a particularly economically healthy place to be. However, the Puerto Ricans protested when they said they were going to spray it in Puerto Rico, and they didn't get it sprayed. They did not spray this particular poison, insecticide, in Puerto Rico. In Florida, they're spraying it. People are mad, but they're too diversified in their view on it to really...
Dr. Judy Mikovits, she spoke at the Vaccine Education Summit that we did, and she's a scientist that went into, you know, how all the... You know, she was one of the first scientists that worked on the AIDS thing, and they found out protoviruses or... Mm-hmm. Retroviruses. Yeah, the retrovirus.
Oh, okay.
That's, she wrote the whole book and the scientific papers, and of course the FBI kicks in, takes all the stuff, don't listen to her, you know, that kind of crap.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, the whole book, Plague, The Plague, and it's from a scientist perspective. That's why I built the whole education, the Vaccine Education Summit around her, and had these great other scientists. So it was awesome. We got the videos going to come out here. It scared the crap out of me.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This whole Zika thing was not the encephalopathy. That happened was from a nationwide vaccine thing that they did, and they tried to hide it with this Zika propaganda crap, and they're doing the same thing in Miami. And she's going, this stuff that they're doing is part of the blah, 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 blah. So it's just, you know, it's like Alex Jones, man. They're soft kill. You know, they're just they're just going to try and kill us in a different way. Make it where you can't resist.
I mean, you know, seriously, I think... If you have some understanding of the nature of power, government power in particular, ultimately, a lot of citizens get killed by their government, okay, before it turns around. I mean, this is history. I mean, you know, it could definitely happen here. And the technology is able to kind of support it, you know, in a lot of different ways. And you know, I think vaccinations, the whole mandate of vaccinations that we have, you know, the acceptance of them, but you notice it's not really working. I mean, think about the flu vaccine. You've probably done some stuff on this, but more people than ever, in fact, I think you told me this, more people than ever don't get the flu vaccine, and they're not getting the flu either. So
have a carrot, man. All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Karen Katowski is on, helping me out. Just to understand, she's got an opinion. Got an opinion. And, you know, I tell you, it comes down to you're talking about the deep state. There is, you know, from your opinion, there's a you know, this government that they say rules us, and then there's the real one. And what are you talking about?
Oh, well, I mean, the government that we have, the government that involves itself in every aspect of our lives, I mean, that's real. I mean, we're dealing with it. It's a real thing, but that's not the government of the Constitution. Right? That's not the government that we imagine, and that's not the government that they're selling us on. You know, what it is, it's just people with power over other people, power to steal, I mean, power to thieve, power to take resources and allocate them when taking a hefty cut for themselves. I mean, it's like the mafia. It's like any it's power is power. It can take a lot of different forms, but when it becomes, you know, power over people, by threat of force and fear, it's either a mafia or it's a government. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And you know, in a mafia, people kind of fight to be it, who's going to be at the top of it, and the average people probably don't have much of a say over it. We don't either, and we've got people fighting to be at the top of it right now, and they don't. You know, it's not really what people want. I mean, a good 45% or 50% of people, maybe more, don't want either one of these guys, and yet we're going to get one of these two guys, gals, or whatever you want to call them. I'm totally liberated, so they're both guys to me. you know,
or both girls, whatever.
You know, seriously, but we're going to get one of these guys, and yet it's pretty clear most of the population, the majority, simple majority population, does not support them, and many people who are voting for this or that person are doing so because they don't want the other person, not because they want that person. So it probably pushes up to 70% of people will not be happy no matter who is elected. And this is not new, by the way. I mean, you think back to the two Bush elections and the Obama elections as well. You had 65% of the people voting that could vote, and then they split the vote pretty close, you know, so 33%. Well, that's a third of the people who supported the candidate. What about the other two-thirds? No, that's not our guy. We didn't want that guy in there, but that's who we got stuck with. Well, it's the same now. This idea that one or two people or any single person, any office, can control and manage a country of 330 million people and all of the landmass that we have, it really makes no sense whatsoever. And again, I'm a big advocate of collapsing the United States into states and regions of independent localities. There's nothing wrong with that. It would make a lot more sense. I mean, and if we can't do that, let's go ahead and get, let's go ahead and reduce the congressional district size so that it's down to what it was at the time the founders did it, you know, so that people can actually have a representative who actually speaks to them and actually understands what their issues are. And when we have such a large Congress, that very few things will get passed. It's what we want. You know, we want gridlock, however we can get it. I mean, everything that passed costs us money that we don't have. So I definitely want to freeze government. But it's way too big. I mean, we are not.
Yeah, no, it's got to. It's not going to get fixed. It has to go away. You know, one thing I want, before we ran out of time, I wanted to ask. You know, Butler sent Schaefer sent this to me. Assange balcony announcement, 1:15 p.m. London time, October 4th. So he's gonna go up on the Ecuadorian balcony. He's gonna say something.
Oh, good.
What might he say?
I don't know.
It's going to be something.
He knows many things. He knows many things. Yes. Now, so, you know, some things he doesn't actually know from WikiLeaks, because remember, he set it up so that they wouldn't, so people were guaranteed digital anonymity when they don't, you know, when they leak stuff. But yeah, he probably knows many things. It'll be interesting to see. I hope it sinks Hillary, because I cannot. You know, I think she would be really awful. But on the other hand, sometimes you have to go really awful before you can turn things around. But yeah, she's an awful, evil person. I don't know how, you know, which makes her actually well qualified to be president as an awful, evil person. But I'm saying, why don't we try something different?
Yeah, no, that's minimum job requirement, man. Didn't you get the memo?
That's right. That's right. I mean, no, it's really.
Well, what have you been? You know, you pay attention probably to the news more than I do. You know, I'm this Charlotte thing. You know, what's that got going on there?
Yeah, you know, I actually have not been watching it as closely as I should, but you know, there is. I'll tell you what it is, in the sense that these things can get stirred up so quickly. People are ready for a fight. They're ready for a fight. They're tired of the way things are. That's the nice way that I'm going to put it. And sure, there's a lot of looting and stuff that has nothing to do with protest. There's no doubt about that. And you know, they're eating their seed corn. You know, they're breaking up their own neighborhoods and destroying them. But why are people so on the hair edge? Well, they're on the hair edge and ready to do a lot of this stuff. And this isn't everybody, but a lot of them are. Because they're sick and tired of the way things have been for them. And many of them don't understand why the things have been for them the way they are. They don't understand why they don't have job opportunities. They don't understand why so many people are in jail and then can't get a job afterwards because now they're a felon, a recovered felon or whatever, and they don't have their rights. They don't understand why it seems to them that the cops are hard on them, even though the numbers of cop abuses. I mean, cops abuse white people and white women and yellow people and all kinds of people. I mean, cop abuse is widespread, but it's something, I think, when it just makes them angry. And it would make me angry too if I lived there. And I don't know, I can't really put my feet in their shoes and wonder what I would do. I think that I would be standing up and I would be spouting off something in front of some video somewhere if I lived. I don't think I'd be looting, because I think that's wrong. But, you know, I can't say it all. I think they're angry. I think a lot of people are angry in this country, and they're not all living in cities. This is part of the Trump phenomenon. The anger that the Trump voter has, this is rural anger, and a lot of it is rural white, okay? They're angry, but they don't live in a clustered area where they can really get together. They got to drive their pickup truck somewhere before they can have a protest. You get in a city somewhere, and people can walk to where they need to be a couple blocks away. There's something going on. Let's go do it. And are they mad? Sure, they're mad. A lot of people in this country are mad. I honestly think it's the 73% that don't support whoever president it is, because it only takes like 30% of the popular vote to get to be president. And all the rest of them, they're not represented, and they get more and more government, more and more regulation, more and more, you know, crappy handouts that don't really, you know, they're enough to make you dependent on them, but not enough to make you to help you, really.
So I'm wondering, how is Trump going to be able to lose? Yeah, I mean, and I'm just
able to
lose. Able, I mean, how is he able to lose? I mean, running with this sentiment of hell no, not the establishment, not Hillary.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's a psyop why they come up with Never Trump, because it's never anybody else. They had to counter it with kind of this cognitive dissonance in people's heads to get them to pick, you know, between the nevers or something. I'm with Texas, man. You know, it's just to see.
You know what's going to happen if he's going to get JFK'd if he doesn't get elected and he doesn't change his tune, they'll just get rid of him. And let me tell you, Pence is the opposite of a libertarian. He is a statist to the core. Okay, he is his view on Muslims is kill them all and sort them out later. At least that's my understanding. You know, I've never heard him say anything different. The people that like Pence are the people that liked Cruz a lot, and I think Pence was the compromise to kind of bring the Cruz people on board. If they whack Trump after he's elected and we get Pence as president, I mean, that's just, that's like, you know, take GWB square him, and that's what you're going to get, GWB squared. That would be Pence. I've seen him once. He's a nice enough guy, but he's a politician. And his foundation, his evangelical perspective on God-centered government is certainly not what God would want, you can be sure of that, because he expects to use military force, you know, to get his will accomplished.
Well, you know, this drug war thing is coming up in that kind of mindset of the Christian, we need to get some kind of nobody can, and now they're going to, this one tree, what do they call it, Kratom, they want to, you know, it does some good. Got to put that up too. And now I'm looking at a story, state proposes bold law to treat pot like tobacco and expunge all records of marijuana crimes. This is New Jersey. It's Christie State, New Jersey state law. You know, expunge all the records of marijuana crimes, and we're done. Wash your hands of it.
Hey,
so you know, Pence and Trump and these guys, they're going, yeah, that. I don't think so. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see what they do. And again, you know, the states. Why do you think states would be interested in doing that? Because they're going broke. You know, it's a waste of their money to pursue these things when they could instead turn marijuana into a tax producer for them. It's all they care about is money. They don't care about freedom, but they do care about money, and that's enough to get them to change their policies and sometimes give us a little more freedom. So there's nothing wrong with that, and the federal government is, you know, it'd be interesting to see when more and more states do this. I don't see a Pence-led government as being very interested in supporting that. I think he would very much think that, oh, I'm going to make sure federalism prevails and we're in charge, you know, we're in charge here kind of thing. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know. You know, I haven't studied him too closely. I'm just giving you my impression.
In 1994, we did an initiative. We had, you know, our Citizens Take Initiative papers and all that kind of stuff. One of the initiatives was, and they freaked out. It got news. I mean, it got legs on this one. When the federal government, this was when our debt was like $4 trillion or something, 94. When the federal government's debt reaches $9 trillion, it'd be double what it was. It was like $4.5 trillion. When it reaches $9 trillion, Arizona secedes. And they went, what?
Oh, wow.
That will never, you can never, why are you doing? I go, well, if it's never going to happen, what are you bitching about? You know, I mean.
That's
right.
That's beautiful.
You know, so they just freaked out because they knew it was going to happen. They knew. And one thing that I talked to some other wealthy individuals or friends, and they have an opinion, we're golfing and whatever, and he goes, you know, it's just Friday, it's last Friday, and he says, it gets paid off in dollars or pennies, but it's going to get paid off. They're looking at inflation is just going to get so bad that, you know, the you know, $20 trillion dollars is going to be paid off with some, you know, buddy got their birthday money
policy.
Or something.
That's the politicized Fed policy. I mean, the Fed has made this debt possible. If we had market set interest rates, no government in the world could borrow more than they were able to pay back, because no banker would give them that money. Only because you have national banks to basically falsify the credit worthiness of various recipients, such as our government. You know, that's the only way they can borrow that money. You can imagine if you looked at the books on our federal government and treated it like a person or a business, and they wanted more money, they wanted like another $1 trillion this year to cover their expenses. You think they'd get any money? No, they wouldn't get any money. Nobody would loan them a penny because they would say, wait a minute, don't you already owe $20 trillion plus $240 trillion in unfunded liabilities? I'm definitely not giving you any more money. How are you supposed to pay this back? What are you putting up for collateral? They already wasted all the collateral they could possibly use to justify their debt. So, it's the Fed is a part of this, and it's a construct. you know, the government made specifically to allow them to borrow at will. You know, and steal from their population. But, yeah, it'll get paid back in pennies. But that's, I don't consider that be paid back. I call that negotiating the debt down. Maybe it's different. Maybe just inflating it away is a strategy. But I don't think many would, you know, I don't think too many people in government would proudly stand up and say that's what they're doing. We know that's what they're doing. But, you know, how many politicians would stand up other than Ron Paul and say they're inflating away their debt? We're going to short every one of you people that has ever, you know, lent us anything. That wouldn't be very wise. To do.
Well, how do you think they should do? You know, what's going to happen? What, in your opinion, how are they going to do this?
Well, I think
they're not going to stop spending. They're not going to pay it off. No. They're not going to be able to.
No. Well, they're going to. It's going to be like any big company that can't pay their debt. They're going to have to liquefy. They're going to have to sell off assets, and they're going to, and the money train is going to stop. You know, the Fed cannot. And this is the problem the Fed has. You know, they've been in a situation where they can't raise interest rates, and if they do, it doesn't cause any interest. You know, remember they jumped it up 0.25 and last year, and it did, or early in the year. It didn't make a difference at all. It made nothing. It had no response. Nobody wanted to, still didn't want it. It is so, the interest rates that they're, the artificial ones that they've set are so far from real that they are miles away from, you know, from being able to transition back into normality, and they can't do it. And if they even raise it up halfway to where normality is, let's say they raise the base rate to 5%, that would be huge. That's still not where the normal interest rate would be.
No, so, this is what happened. I remember, you look back in when Reagan first came in the first part of his first term, it was interest rates at the Fed went up to 15%, 16% on 30-year treasuries. It was just enormous. Mm-hmm. And then when Italy and Greece and so on, oh, my God, they broke 6%. We're all going to die. And I'm like, you know, what? I go, hell, their annuities are guaranteed 6, 7, 8%. I don't know how they're making their money. You know, these. So this whole thing on every level is going to be crashing. They have to keep it this low. But why would I invest a 30-year in a negative, you know, with certainly with inflation?
Right.
And it's
that's
just, right. And then they're charging me to keep my cash. So they're like intentionally driving you into commodities or getting metals,
well,
where they're manipulating, suppressing that. This whole thing is going to go, Karen. And when it does, it's going to be everything's going to get wiped off the table. Yeah. Are y'all in? Well, it's ours now.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I think people that are putting their money outside of anything the government can get its hands on, that's where smart money is going. We already know that. We already know where investments are going. They're not going into 30-year negative interest rate bonds. Nobody's buying those. Nobody wants those. And also, you know, the whole push for electronic, you know, to eliminate cash, the war against cash, is, you know, all that does is cause people to hoard their cash because we see what's coming. We're not interested in giving a government that has done nothing for us and that we do not respect or do not trust. Why would we want to pay taxes to them? And they know that. You think the people in charge don't know that, you know, we're trying to avoid taxes? That's the big one thing that Hillary was getting on Trump about. You don't, you know, people are going to find out you don't pay any taxes. And if he doesn't, he says, well, that's because I'm smart. And you know what? That's exactly right. He's speaking to 70% of the population who agree with him on this. And they're right. We do not want to, why would we pay? Why would we allow ourselves to be taken down a path? And we're doing it now. But I'm just saying, people are getting sick of it.
He goes, yeah, you know, I did this and bankrupt that and pay that and do it. Yep, laws. I'd use kind of, you'll change them. You don't like it, you know, life sucks, business, and bite me. And one thing before you go, real quick, there was, I know you got to get going here. Syria had audio of the U.S. Communicating and coordinating with ISIS before the attack on, you know, the Syrian force. And the point that they were making is that, you know, the U.S. is, you know, they're not what they say they are, and they're not keeping the peace, and they're doing, and we're bad guys.
Oh, for sure. Of course not. Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, and the fact that our military, well, that the attack on the Syrian part that happened before the attack on the on the attack of the relief vehicles, there's two big attacks that got in the news. One was where we supposedly mistakenly hit a bunch of Syrian government forces. Trust me, that was not a mistake. No way in the world it was a mistake. If it was a mistake, we would have fired somebody. We'd have fired anybody. It was not a mistake, okay? So that was on purpose. That was in line with the policy, et cetera, et cetera. Then About a week later or so, they had that attack on the convoy, which we blamed on the Russians. And it turns out, looks like the ISIS guys did that, not the Russians. So, you know, because why would the Russians do it anyway? It's not even a
That doesn't
thing.
Matter. The first 24, 48, 72-hour cycle of the Russians did it. Now everybody knows Russians did it. Russians did it.
Yep. Well, they're trying to get us in a big war because, actually, you know, a government that's broke, they either collapse or they get another big war and they prolong their life by mandating more and more controls over the people because they're facing a life-threatening war of some kind, you know, a life and death situation, which in this globe, you know, we are globalized. Information-wise, we're globalized. I mean, we can hear and learn everything in such a way we've never been able to do it before. It's going to be really hard to convince people that there's a big war, that a whole country of people wants to kill a whole country of other people. Because that really doesn't exist. Even in the Middle East, you do not have a whole country that wants to kill a whole other country. Not even Israel. Israel does not want to kill all of Iran. And Iran does not want to kill all of Israel. And those are the closest cases we could probably think of. And even there, we know that it's not a unanimous decision. It's not this massive thing that's going to cause this great war. So these great wars that great governments fantasize about that basically characterize the whole 20th century and early 21st century, but we really have a great war in the 21st century. The great wars are behind us. But governments love great wars. How are they going to get one? They can't because the people have too much access to too much video. I mean, you know, if you think about, you mentioned the things in Charlotte and all these other places where they're having these cop-incited riots because somebody got arrested and somebody put a handgun down, you know, to blame a guy or whatever. All this stuff is because people got video of it. It's a dangerous thing for governments, for the population to become informed, even if they're badly or incompletely informed, at least they are informed. And they know that there's an alternative story to what the government story is. And we're seeing that all over. So, you know, and again, I think this whole thing about not believing what the federal government says, this is part of Trump's theme. You know, Hillary is a liar. And what did he say? He also called Ted. Remember Ted Cruz? He called him Lying Ted.
Yeah.
Remember he did that? I don't really know why, because I wasn't following it that close, like what particular lie Ted told.
Yeah, which
I knew
one?
Ted's a liar anyway, because he missed that vote on the Fed. He was going to vote to end the Fed, then he missed that vote. So I knew he did that on purpose, because he didn't really want to end the Fed, but whatever.
Yeah, because his wife just went back working for Goldman Sachs again in Houston or something.
Sure did, yeah. So, but I don't know why, I mean, I know why I would call him Lying Ted, but I don't know why Trump was calling him Lying Ted, but he did. But that theme of here's another lying politician is very much resonating with the American people and probably people around the world who also understand. I mean, you know, look at the Brexit and the reaction that EU has had. They're nothing but a bunch of liars over there. So, people around the world suffer from lying governments. This is not a new concept. It's been around for ages and ages. But we're talking about it and we're able to prove it to some extent. And that's a good thing. But, yeah, our government is definitely broke. Our federal government It's certainly broken. It has gone down a bad path that it cannot come out from. Inflating away the debt is also to inflate away everybody's Social Security that they got stolen from them for the last 55 years or however long it was they've paid into it. And that's going to anger a few people. You think you don't like seeing riots in Charlotte? wait till the entitled people that want their Social Security feel that they've gotten shorted from it. The older people right now are the richest segment in the society. People over 60 got all the wealth. There's no doubt about it. But once those folks start retiring and not feel and really feeling like they've been taken for a ride and lied to, these people are educated. They have access to the internet. They can read all this stuff. Trust me, they ain't going to be happy. So what do you
think? Yeah, no, I think they're
going to euthanize them.
Well, yeah, it's a death panel of it's our money now.
That's right.
Damn it. All right, Karen, I'll let you go. We could go on forever, and your husband's probably tapping his foot already.
He needs me now, so. But anyway, yeah, good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. We'll have you on at least, you know, more before the election.
Yeah,
we got to get some Karen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to do it.
All right, thanks, Karen. Bye-bye.
Okay, see you later.
Mindset that you